Hey, you guys, Tomes of Terror time, doing another book review today. Now, the one that I'm doing here is one that I guess I had like heard a lot about it, because like I said, I watch a lot of other horror YouTube channels and stuff like that, trying to get recommendations and, trying to put my finger on the pulse of like what other people are reading and stuff. And I saw this one come up in a lot of people's either anticipated or, ones they had read and stuff like that. I think it came out in 2019 originally. And I guess this guy is pretty well known for writing a massively successful novel several years ago called The Perks of Being a Wallflower. And he also did the screenplay for the movie. And he hasn't written a novel since then, but that's because he's been working in TV and movies. I think he co-wrote the screenplays for like Beauty and the Beast, the live action one, and Rent, the movie of Rent. And I think he was one of the co-creators of the show Jericho as well. So he's been busy doing stuff and hasn't got around to writing a novel until now. His name is Stephen Chbosky, and this book here, which I, like I said, I believe it came out in 2019, is called Imaginary Friend. And the premise of it sounded really, really cool. And indeed, I feel like I have like really conflicting like opinions about this. Not opinions, but conflicting feelings about it. Let's put it that way. So this is kind of going to be like, I don't know. It's not going to be hard for me to talk about exactly, but it's kind of like, again, I'm not going to like spoil anything necessarily that happens in the book, but I might kind of spoil some thematic elements. And just because I think people should, it's one of those ones where the blurb on the back of the book, which sounds really good, actually only encompasses maybe like the first half or three quarters of the book, and then it kind of goes in a different direction that maybe people aren't expecting, and I feel like maybe that should have been disclosed. I don't know. It didn't really bother me that much, but some reviews I saw of it, I was on Goodreads, and it looks like it has a pretty solid like 3.5 to 4 star reviews. Some people loved it, and actually I kind of loved it, and I liked it overall. Like I enjoyed it overall, but I think toward the end, it kind of got a little something something, you know what I mean? I'll kind of get into that in a little bit. But, like I said, overall it was a good experience, but it's because this book is so long, it's like 700 odd pages. It's like, and this doesn't even like I and the type is like really small. Like when I first opened it up, I was just like, oh my God, this is gonna, and I'm not like intimidated by like big huge books or anything, but since I've been doing these reviews, I've been trying to like read a lot more books like more quickly, and I didn't realize, I was like, oh, that doesn't look that long, but then when you open it and the type is like super small, I was just kind of like, oh my God. So it was like, take forever, but it actually didn't really take me that long to read. Maybe, I don't know, maybe 8 hours overall, like over a couple of days, like 2.5 days it took me to read, because the first part of it, like I said, the first, I don't know, I want to say like 60 to 75% of it was like really compelling, and I just kept wanting to like come back to it. And then after that, it kind of, I was kind of like, oh, it's going this way. And then I was just kind of like, meh. And then I still like felt compelled to finish it, but it started going in a direction that I wasn't really sure that I was happy with. You know what I mean? So I don't know. We'll get into it. So the beginning of this book, like I said, I kind of feel like it's based around this 7-year-old boy named Christopher. And him and his mom, Kate. Kate has been, she's a single mom, and she was married. I guess her and Christopher's dad, they had like a very happy life together. But he committed suicide at some point in the past, like only a year or two previously. And since then, their life has kind of been going down the toilet a little bit. She's kind of had a lot of dead end jobs. She can't really, get her act together. She can't get a good job and stuff, and she keeps ending up in a series of bad relationships with like really abusive dudes and everything. I guess her background, she grew up in a very abusive household, so it's almost kind of like she's repeating the cycle, and she wants to get out of it, and she can't like get out of it. So at the beginning of the book, she's with this abusive asshole named Jerry. And she finally decides she's not gonna fucking take it anymore. So she has been putting some money aside. So she kind of like takes her son and like sneaks out in the middle of the night and goes to a place where she hopes that he can't track them down. So they go to this little town called, I think it's called Millgrove or Mills Grove, Pennsylvania, which is, I've only been to Pennsylvania once, so I'm not really sure if this is a real town or not, but it sounds like it's not too far from Pittsburgh. So kind of outside of there, but sort of like a, a real small town type thing. Now, the first part of this, like I said, the bulk of this book is very Stephen King-like. It also kind of gave me vibes in the sense that what ends up happening is that the house they get, at first they're living in a motel because, like I said, she's a single mom and she doesn't have a lot of money, but she's really, I mean, the mom, Kate, is a really great character. The kid is too. I really liked the two of them and I really wanted to see them succeed because they were just really, really good people and they were trying really hard to make a life for themselves, and shit was just, life was just like shitting on them generally. So I was just kind of like, yeah, I can feel that. So I could really relate to them and they seemed like really good people. So she ends up moving, they move into a motel. She gets a job at like an old folks home, like cleaning up like an orderly or something like that, and puts Christopher in school. And she even like lies about their address. She gives him her work address so that, so he can go to a better school and shit like that. Now, Christopher also has a learning disability. I don't know if they ever say outright, but it seems like he's dyslexic because the way that he taught, the way that he, reads, it's like he's shows how they see it. It's like all the, letters are mixed up. So he's really not good in school and he berates himself all the time for being dumb. And his mom is just like really sweet about it. She's just kind of like, you'll get it, you'll get it. You know what I mean? It's like, it's okay, you can figure it out. And and he's kind of afraid that he's never going to be able to. So they move to this town. The kid, Christopher starts kind of getting bullied. The old folks home where Kate works is owned by the Collins family, who are kind of like the rich assholes that own most of the town, like in the, in a lot of these kind of stories. This, it has a very Stephen King-like vibe, as I said. This is a very like Derry, Maine type of town where there's like one family that owns everything and they throw their weight around and be dicks to everybody and treat everybody else like servants. So you have that kind of shit going on too. And also they have a Draco Malfoy-ish kind of kid who goes to school who's like the same age as Christopher. So of course he's like a horrible child, but he's not horrible like one-dimensionally. It's kind of like everybody in this that's a terrible person in the town, they have a reason for being a terrible person, because that's one thing that kind of like comes into play like thematically later on. So that was one thing I did like, is that the characters are not, even the quote-unquote bad guys are not one-dimensional. It's always just kind of like, they act like shit, but they have a reason behind that. Like sometimes they've been abused, or sometimes, they're, like I said, they're repeating cycles of violence and things like that. So that is kind of like gone into. So it's not like a real simplistic kind of narrative. So what ends up happening is the kid, Christopher, he starts going to play in this big patch of woods called the Mission Street Woods. Now, the Collins family is going to be building some shit out there, like houses and everything. So they've started like tearing all the woods down, and a lot of people are kind of like, mad about it. But, it's kind of going ahead anyway. And it should be noted too that there's like a prologue to this book that takes place like 50 years prior in the same town. And you're led to assume that a little boy named David, who is about the same age as Christopher, went into the Mission Street Woods and something really bad happened to him. Like he went missing and he was never found. So as it goes on, Christopher starts getting what seems to be an imaginary friend. Somebody that kind of like talks to him, and at first, like, he goes into the woods and he sees a person, but then the imaginary friend is sort of like manifested as this white plastic bag that's like hanging in this tree, and he's kind of going out in the woods and like talking to this white plastic bag, and he's fully aware that if somebody saw him doing it, then they would say he was crazy. So he's real careful to like keep it on the down low. But apparently what ends up happening is that he kind of starts, talking to this person, and he, whoever it is, and good stuff starts to happen. Like, his mom wins the lottery. Like, he starts getting really good at math. Like, he figures out like how to read, and then he starts getting like smarter and smarter and smarter and like turning into a genius. Like I said, his mom wins the lottery, so they are able to you know, I don't think it's like $1 billion or anything, but it's enough for them to pay off their debts and, you know, buy a decent house and stuff like that. So it seems like everything's looking up for them, you know, once he starts talking to this imaginary friend. And the imaginary friend basically tells him, what you need to do is you need to get some of your little friends together and you need to build a treehouse in the middle of the Mission Street woods. And he basically tells him, like, everything to do, like, how to do it, where to get the supplies from. So he's basically giving him, like, psychic powers because he gets to a point where he's so focused on building this treehouse and he's, like, starts to be able to read people's thoughts. So he actually knows what everybody's thinking, which is good up to a point. But then as it goes on and he gets, like, his brain expands more and more, it seems like it starts to become kind of like a curse because he's so inundated with other people's pain and anger and stuff like that, that it's just kind of like fucking him up. And basically, I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to say that this treehouse, what it is basically a sort of a portal between the real world and the imaginary world, right? So that's what he ends up building. So it comes to a point too where he can go into the imaginary world where it's like, it looks like the same town, but he can like creep around and like see, and nobody can see him. So there's that whole thing. And then there's a bunch of like weird shit going on too. Like, you know, a bunch of weird shit going on in the imaginary world, which I won't spoil. So that's kind of like the setup. And like I said, that's like the first probably like 60, 75% of the book. And that part was awesome. I was just kind of like, I was so like into it. I was like, this kid, he goes into the woods, he disappears for 6 days. He doesn't know, he can't remember anything. And then he comes back and now he's like a super genius. And now he's, you know, his mom wins the lottery, like all this crazy shit happens. And then I think his mom won the lottery before he went missing. But yeah, so it's kind of like I said, I think that's what reminded me of Pen Pal, which I loved, by the way, which I reviewed a little while back, just because there was like a kid that goes missing in the woods and he's gone for a while and then he comes back and he's different. So that's kind of like the same thing. But other than that, it's not really that much the same as that book. But that plot trope kind of like, you know, reminded me of that. Yeah, so he goes missing, he comes back, and now he's like really smart. And he's like, he talks to this imaginary friend who he just calls the nice man through this bag. But he also kind of sees him sometimes. It's not like super clear. But, you know, and he's building this treehouse and he gets like three of his little friends to build this tree. And it's like it's an awesome treehouse too. It's like way better than any 7-year-old should be able to build. Like, it's all professional and shit. But yeah, and it serves as like a, like I said, a portal between the worlds. And then there's also like a scary element too, because there's this something like a demon or something like that called the Hissing Lady. And she's like super scary. She's almost like a witch. So there's that element too. And that's kind of like going back to 50 years ago, the first kid, David, that disappeared. He was, you're led to presume that he was taken out of his window by this witch or whatever. So you're kind of thinking, and then the nice man is telling Christopher that it's like, we have to, you know, do something about the Hissing Lady. She's really bad. And it seems like she's really bad. So that's kind of like where the whole narrative comes from. Now, at this point, like I said, I'm not going to spoil everything that happens outright, but I am going to say right here, this is a long book and it's a commitment. If you are not willing for this to go in a pretty much straight up Christian fiction direction, then this might just like make you mad. I don't really love that, because I remember, I don't think I ended up doing a long-term review of this book because I didn't finish it. But remember when I brought up the book Monster by Frank Peretti, which I actually kind of knew going into it was like a Christian fiction, like Bigfoot kind of thing. But then once it started going off on like the creationist ranting, I was like, yeah, I just can't anymore. This one didn't go that far. This one actually kind of gave me the same vibe as when I was a kid and I was really into like the Chronicles of Narnia books, mostly The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. The other ones I didn't really give a shit about. I did read them, but they weren't all that memorable. Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, I read like a million times. But because I wasn't raised religious, it didn't occur to me until I was older that that was like supposed to be a Christian allegory. I just thought it was a cool fantasy story. Like, I didn't get all the lion being Jesus and all that kind of stuff. Or as Dom Noble calls it, it's Jesus' persona, which like that makes me laugh. But yeah, so, but this one's a lot more overt. with the Christian imagery. And like I said, I'm not offended by that necessarily. You know, Stephen Chbosky was raised Catholic. He seems like he's not super religious anymore, at least from the couple of interviews I've read with him. But spirituality does seem to matter to him a lot. And the direction that this goes is absolutely like a battle of good and evil, Satan and God type of thing at the end. So if that's gonna like make you mad or just be like, oh geez, really, then I wouldn't recommend it, because like I said, it's long, and the first, you know, half to three quarters of it are like so awesome, and it's just kind of like a mystery story where it's like, what the hell's going on with this kid and this nice man, like this imaginary friend and this hissing lady witch, like what's going on with the imaginary world and the treehouse, and it's like the portal between the worlds, why is he getting smarter, why is all this stuff happening? And it's like, it was so cool. And I have to admit that when I saw that it was going in that direction, I was just kind of like, ah, well, okay. You know what I mean? It was just kind of, it wasn't just kind of like, I didn't like throw it at the wall or anything, but I was kind of like, I don't know. It was like a little bit of a letdown, I guess. And like I said, I'm not, it doesn't offend me. You can use Christian mythology in your stories, just like you can use anything else in your stories. Like I said, I love The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, even though, you know, when I was growing up, I didn't realize that that was a Christian allegory until I got older, because I wasn't, you know, raised super religious. Like, I knew the stories and everything, like I had Bible stories and shit like that, but it didn't really occur to me to relate those two things. I just thought it was a cool story. So I don't know. So how you feel about that? So that's what I'm saying about how I kind of wish... And I saw a couple other people on Goodreads saying this too, that maybe this should be kind of marketed. I don't know if it should be marketed as Christian fiction, but maybe, I don't know, they should give like more of a clue about that, because this does seem more like, just like a creepy kid, he goes in the woods and there's like something scary in the woods type of thing. And there's not really a hint at the beginning. There's like a couple of religious characters in it, but that's just their characters. It's not, but it doesn't really give you a hint until much later in the book that that thematically it's going in that, you know, battle of God and the devil kind of situation. I don't know. I feel like maybe they should make that a little bit more clear. Another thing too is that the last part of the book, like the last quarter of the book that goes in that direction, now you know that Christopher is kind of like the fulcrum of this battle between good and evil. Like this big epic battle, he's gonna like save the world and all this other stuff. I felt like the last 25% was really, could have been trimmed down some. It's because it feels like it was just like a one long chase that could have been trimmed. You know what I mean? Because it seemed like a lot of the chase was kind of like repetitive. It's just kind of like, you know, now we're gonna try and kill the hissing lady, and now we can't kill the hissing lady, and now we're gonna do this, you know? And it just, and everybody's like, you know, the nice man, and everybody's like chasing everybody around like through the imaginary world, and you know, this person's getting hurt, that person's getting hurt, but it just seemed like the same things were happening over and over again. So like the end of it was a little bit of a slog. Not, like I said, not so much that I was just kind of like, I'm not gonna finish it, but it did kind of slow the shit down so much. And it was kind of like a disappointment, because I felt like the first part of this was just really, really good. And the first part of it was so good that I could barely put it down. I was just kind of like, I kept wanting to go back to it. And it's like, I read like half the book, like in one sitting, just because it was so compelling and I wanted to keep going. And like I said, the characters of Kate, the mom, and Christopher, the kid, are so good. Like, they're such lovely people that you really want to see what happens to them. And like, when bad shit happens to them, you're like, oh man, you know, it's like, so I got really emotionally invested in them and some of the other characters as well. But by the time it gets to the end, it just kind of like drags on a little bit. And you're just kind of like, okay, like we get it. Let's move this along a little bit. Let's kind of see what it was. And also I felt like the ending went a little too, I don't know, sentimental. I don't know. I haven't read The Perks of Being a Wallflower, which, as far as I can determine, obviously is not a horror novel. But it was one that really seemed to resonate with a lot of people. It was on the bestseller list like forever. And it's just like, I remember they made the movie about it, and a lot of people really liked it. It seemed like a little bit of a sentimental story. And maybe that's his thing, man. You know, it's like, that's cool. Like, you do you. But I don't know if I was that into it in a horror novel of this type. I just felt like the end was a little too, I don't know. I don't want to say, because like bad shit did happen, but I didn't want to say it was like too, not sappy necessarily, but it's just kind of, I don't know, just overly sentimental, trying to be uplifting and like I said, I'm not saying you can't have that. I'm just saying that this particular story, I kind of liked, would have liked it to go in a different direction. That's kind of the only thing I'm saying. So it sounds like I'm shitting on the book. I'm not. I really did enjoy it overall. But as I said, I kind of wish that the last quarter of it had been edited down some because it just seemed like it kind of went on and on when it really probably didn't need to. Seemed a little treacly at the end, like a little like uplifting everything, kind of Christian-y sort of message, which, okay, like I said, that's fine. And as I said, I kind of wish that I had known going into it that that was going to be the direction it was going to go because I thought it was not a bummer, but I was just kind of like, yeah, all right. If that's the direction you're gonna go, like I said, it didn't piss me off the same way that the Frank Peretti book did because that one was just like an anti-evolution screed, and I was just kind of like, really, man? Okay, just write a story. Like, why do you have to do that? But so it didn't do that. So it's still good. It's still worth reading. But I'm just like telling people if you think that that plot twist or whatever you want to call it or that thematic thrust is going to get on your nerves, then you might not want to invest the time in it. And it's like kind of a shame because like the first three quarters of this book is so good. It's just so good. And because I was like reading this, I was like, man, I fucking love this. I love this book. And it was just like really. And then when I got to the end, I was just kind of like, ah, now I don't love it as much. You know what I mean? He's just like, he didn't stick the landing. But you know, that's cool. That's cool. And I'm sure like some people will be super into it, and that's cool too. And overall, like, you know, I'm glad I read it. It's just, I bought this at Barnes and Noble, actually. I went to an actual bookstore and bought this. This one in Mexican Gothic, I think I picked up last time I was at the bookstore because I had seen so many people talking about it, and I was like, okay, why not? I'll give it a whirl. And and like I said, I'm glad I did. It is very Stephen Kingy until it gets to the end, and then it kind of goes like C.S. Lewisy. You know what I mean? So if that sounds like something that's up your alley, then by all means pick it up. I'd be curious to see if any of you guys have read it and what you thought about it. Were you as surprised by the religious direction that it took? Just let me know in the comments. I'm just very interested about this one because, like I said, I really have conflicting feelings about this one because the first part of it, I just loved, 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 like the first 60, 75% of it. And then at the end, I was just kind of like, I didn't hate it. I was just kind of like, oh, I just don't love it as much now because it kind of like disappointed me a little bit. But I'd be curious to see what other people's reactions are about it. So if you've read it, let me know in the comments. And that will do it for this Tomes of Terror, and I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.